We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to not just another episode of Lords of Limited. We've got the Outlaws of Thunder Junction Crash Course. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line, as always, we've got Mr. Ethan Warm P. Sachs. Ethan, the people have spoken. You floated RAMP. WRAMP is the acronym for Outlaws last week, and the Discord has decided that it is officially Warm P. How do you feel about that? Magic players, notably mature individuals.
I reject all instances of Warm P. So what Ben is talking about here is foul, and now I have to put an explicit rating on the podcast.
But is it really?
No, I don't think so. But we're talking about the acronym that I proposed for the five outlaw types, which I'm not even sure I could do. Was it warlocks, assassins, rogues, mercenaries, pirates? There you go.
You nailed it. I've been saying it to myself all weekend. It's pretty catchy.
Warm P. Order of Warm P. Well, of course, and in classic magic hive mind fashion, I floated an idea and everyone was like, I have ideas too. What's so great about this guy? I can have an idea. And so we got some Warm P. What my favorite one was, someone proposed, not sure what's an outlaw, just ask Mr. Paw. And there's like a little rhyming to it, and then Mr. Paw is it. I think Warm P is, I don't know, whatever you need to get by, to get to the end of the day. If it's Warm P to get you to remember outlaws, go for it. That's what I'm here for.
Appreciate you.
Are we ready? Are we ready to sling some spells? To get into some plotting, to find some wanted posters. I don't know. What are the tropes for the Old West?
Listen, I'm here for the tropes. You're saying this with a hint of sarcasm. I'm buying into the Wild West. I'm ready to yee-haw at the pre-release this Friday.
Are you a big Western guy?
I don't think so, but
yeah, I didn't think so either.
Into this set, I don't know. The flavor really hits for me. I can't explain it.
Okay, well, I'm glad you had your flavor hit for Strixhaven as your teacher and your Harry Potter love, and now we've got another hit here with Outlaws of Thunder Junction. So we've got way too much to get to today. So we got to cut the banter out and just get into the crash course. If you've never joined us for the beginning of a new set season, well, first of all, welcome. And second of all, we do things a little differently around here. We do not do a full card by card, and God bless the people out there, may I say, who do full card by card set reviews, because I have to say, if someone asked me on stream, they're like, oh, are you going to be doing a set review? I was like, well, currently I certainly can't do anything for like 6 hours straight now that I have Jonah. But secondly, I just think the days of me wanting to do a set review are long gone, and the market is saturated. If you want a set review, you could probably just listen to set reviews back to back to back all day, every day leading up to the pre-release, and still have more.
It's a 48-hour marathon of
to queue reviews. Up. So we do not do a full card-by-card set review, but we have graded all the commons and uncommons, and that'll be in a spreadsheet where you download the show. You can check that out and see what you disagree with, agree with, whatever. We'll rank the top commons and uncommons as well. But we're going to be looking at the format in more of a broader, big picture sense. We're going to look at some keywords and archetypes, some things that often shape limited formats like mana sinks, mana fixing, life gain, sweepers, that sort of thing. We'll also look at how creatures and removal line up with each other. And then we'll get into our grade differences. So like I said, we've graded all the cards separately, and then we'll look at where Ben and I have at least a two or more gradation difference. So if I gave something a C- and Ben, ever the optimist, gave something a C+, we're going to talk about it, see if we can't convince someone else to come over to our side. And then we'll get to ranking our top commons and uncommons. Little shift here for play boosters, because now there's 15 commons of each color in the card file, and then only one less, 14 uncommons. Because of play boosters. So we actually are going to be doing top three commons and top three uncommons this time around. So strap in for a 2-hour crash course. Anything I missed, Ben?
I don't think so. The gradation differences and the top commons and uncommons are all over the place.
I think it was the last time, like Murders of Karlov Manor, maybe, or one of the most recent sets. We were pretty synced up for our top commons and uncommons. Like maybe swapped them, like a first and a second, whatever. We've got, I think between the two of us, we're probably naming half the commons and uncommons.
But I think that's exciting. That means there's a lot of powerful commons and uncommons. And I think a lot of commons and uncommons that belong in two of the four decks or something, for example. Yeah. And maybe we like different archetypes or want to steer towards different archetypes or something, you know?
Yeah, that's what I'm excited about is I think our differences of the top commons and uncommons is going to perhaps lead to a different framing. And so I'm excited to see like how you're viewing the format versus maybe how I'm viewing the format. So let's do some quick housekeeping, then we'll get into the full episode. First things first, the Patreon page, patreon.com/lordsoflimited, where folks can go to give back to the show if they so choose. The show will always be free, but we've got some great perks over at the Patreon. And I have to say the greatest of all the perks is access to the Lords of Limited Discord. That's what everybody who gives back via the Patreon gets access to. It's hopping, it's popping. We fired a whopping four practice drafts on day one of the format going live. I think that's more than we've fired in the totality of the formats leading up to release on Arena and Magic Online. So if you want to get in on some practice drafts, comparing tier lists and card rankings with other like-minded limited individuals, the Lords of Limited Discord is for you. Some great perks as you move up the reward tier rankings as well. Get access to the show a day early, ad-free. Get access to the show notes if you want to see it in written form. Really great for episodes like the Crash Course and 50 Takes, where we've got it really panned out. What am I looking at here? I'm looking at a six-page Google Doc, if you want that. It's like a book. It's in a little addendum to the show here. And you can even get monthly coaching sessions with me or Ben if you move all the way up the reward tier ranking. So if any or all of that sound of interest to you, head on over to the Patreon page. And we want to shout out our new patrons the first week that they join. So this week we're welcoming Andrew, Don, Alexander, Derek, Danny, Charlie, Glenn, David, Lionel, Benjamin, and Jacob. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Yeah, cannot say thank you enough. That Benjamin in there, I believe, is a Benjamin Thomas. I saw on the Discord. Whoa, there's another one. That's my middle name. Good, strong name, Benjamin Thomas. That's what I get when I'm in deep trouble with my mother.
Do you still get that?
Fight, yo, yeah. Wow. If I get Benjamin Thomas, I am instantly like...
Does it make you feel like 7 years old again when it happens?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's powerful stuff. That's powerful stuff. All right. Stats, baby. Let's check out first what number/percentage does specific removal hit of the 106 creatures at common or uncommon. That starts us off with X1s. There's a handful of ways to deal with X1s. It's back from an oldie but a goodie, Skullduggery from Ixalan, single black. Though I guess maybe it was a reprint even then. Single black for an instant until... end of turn, target creature you control gets +1/+1, and target creature an opponent control gets -1/-1. Important to note with Skullduggery, has to have two targets. Can't fire this off without a creature on your side of the battlefield as well.
Also important note, card is excellent.
Yeah, yeah. One mana, not to be underestimated here.
Some mercenary tokens are going to be getting Skullduggery. You better move it. Next, we've got Neutralize the Guards. This is 2 and a black for an instant. Creatures target opponent controls get -1/-1 until end of turn. Surveil 2.
And then, you know, mercenary tokens are floating around. If you have like 1/1s coming in for free or as an addition to another real card, that's sort of a way to punish X1s. And we actually only have 11 creatures with toughness 1.
Ooh, that's very low.
That's the lowest we've ever seen. Usually this is in the high teens, maybe sometimes pushing up on low 20s, but this is pretty low. So 10% of the creatures overall have toughness 1.
That takes us on to spells that are going to deal with creatures that are X2s. First up is Steer Clear here. White for an instant, deals 2 damage to target attacking or blocking creature, deals 4 damage if you control a mount as you cast this spell.
We've got Desert's Dew, 1 and a black for an instant at common. Target creature gets -2/-2 until end of turn. It gets an additional -1/-1 until end of turn for each desert you control.
Next up, we've got Thunder Salvo. This is 1 and a red for an instant. Deals X damage to target creature, where X is 2 plus the number of other spells you've cast this turn.
And lastly, Slick Sequence is 2 red for an instant. Deals 2 damage to any target, and if you've cast another spell this turn, draw a card. So quite a few ways to deal with creatures with 2 toughness, and actually quite a few creatures with 2 toughness, 41, which I guess is like making up for the low number of 1 toughness creatures, brings us up to 50% of the creatures overall.
Yeah, and of those 4 spells, I think all of them are pretty darn good, other than Steer Clear.
Yeah, you're such a steer clear hater. Now, I think I'm with you. Yeah, what's nice about them is either Slick Sequence can, as it scales with the game, can draw you a card, right? Can cantrip, because ideally you're double spelling. And Desert's Dew and Thunder Salvo as well can scale with the game and kill things that are even larger than two toughness.
That takes us on to creatures that are X3s. There's nothing that specifically deals with three toughness or three damage the first time. So as we saw, some of those spells can scale, like Thunder Salvo will be right. able to hit an X3. And so there's 21 creatures with toughness 3, which is 70% of the creatures overall.
Moves us on to X4s. A big way to deal with 4 toughness creatures is Explosive Derailment. This is a spree spell, starts off costing red, and you can add 2 to have it deal 4 damage to target creature, or you can add 2 to have it destroy target artifact.
That's a good one. And then we've also got Steer Clear Mount enabled here, which hits 93% of the creatures. A lot. Yeah, almost all of the creatures
are going to be 4 or 4 toughness or less. Takes us on to X5s. One spell here at uncommon is Scorching Shot. Red for a sorcery. Deal 5 damage to target creature. Only 5 creatures with toughness 5, which brings us up to 98%. So truly almost all of the creatures.
That is wild.
Yeah.
Yeah, Scorching Shot's great, assuming you can cast it. And lastly, we've got Trick Shot here that's going to deal with creatures with toughness 6 or more. This is 4 and a red for an instant, deals 6 damage to target creature, and 2 damage to up to 1 other target creature token.
Mercenaries, beware. Yeah, there's just one lone 4/7 in the commons and uncommons.
That survives everything.
Dodges all of this removal. Oftentimes we want to check other sort of conditional removal, like if there's something that deals with, you know, power 4 or greater, or power 3 or less, whatever. Okay, this time we have Shoot the Sheriff, which can destroy target non-outlaw creature for 1 and a black. Well, how many outlaws are there? Well, there's 46 of the 106. So that's going to be 57% of the creatures this kin target that are non-outlaw creatures. So like we said, usually in these, you know, typal formats, if it's like destroy target non-artifact creature in an artifact set, it hits about half the creatures.
Yeah, just pray that you're playing against green white mounts.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Anything else going on with the removal here that is noteworthy or that our listeners should know?
Yeah, so in the grading spreadsheet that you'll have access to when you download the show, there'll be a tab for removals. You can check that out. There's about 20 spells there that I slotted in. Lots of things happening at instant speed. 14 of the 20 are at instant speed, and like you could even say 15 of the 20, because one of those is that 2-mana artifact at uncommon that you can pay 6 to like blow up a bunch of stuff. So like
does it count as removal?
Well, and does it, like, you cast it at sorcery speed, but then you can activate it at instant speed? Like, tough to say. So lots of stuff happening at instant speed, so I think it's gonna be quite an interactive set. White has a lot of removal. I believe five spells, and it's not really conditional. Like, you know, it's got Steer Clear, but the rest is just like, you know, maybe it has to be a tapped creature, but it's just getting stuff out of the way. And only one counter spell in blue. Usually we have 2-3 spread across common and uncommon. Only one, and I kind of think it's a banger. I believe it's in both of our top 3 commons. Some things we didn't count in the spreadsheet: there's a couple of mini sweepers that we'll get to a little later. There's like a bad tapper in white. There's some, you know, naturalized disenchant effects, a couple bounce spells in blue, and the switcheroo variant, Shifting Grift, that lets you exchange creatures. It's like, is that removal? Is it not? Like, yes, it deals with bombs in a way, but like, just decided to cleanly leave it off. So some very interesting things. That the massive amount of instant speed interaction is the big takeaway for me.
So removal, good or bad, greater garbage on the removal here?
It's tough because, you know, since you compared the plot stuff to sagas, the like sagas from Neo last week, I can't quite get out of my head that maybe removal is going to be bad in this format because everything is a 2-for-1.
Like, that's what I think.
It's like, not like
everything's a 2-for-1.
Have you played any of the Artifact Remix thing that's on Arena
no,
right now?
No, but it looks sweet, and I am planning to do that later today.
So it's really sweet, and it's like, it's a cool thing that they're doing, and we won't really have an opportunity to talk about it. Maybe we'll make a YouTube video or something, but it's like halfway between a cube and not a cube, because it's the packs are curated, right? And so it's in terms of there's a rare, there's 3 uncommons, and then I think 9 commons or whatever. So one of the things I got tripped up in the first few drafts was I was like, oh my God, Thraben Inspector, pick 6. This is so sick. And like just taking all the, but everything is a 2-for-1. Like everything is card plus rectangle. And so it just doesn't matter. And like every color gets good official removal. So removal doesn't matter. Not to say that you don't need to end up with it in your deck at some point, but it's not the thing that makes or breaks games. It's like everyone's going to have the two for ones and the removal. So what makes you like you either have to have really strong cards that you're holding on to or an engine that you're building that goes over the top of your opponent. And I think there might be something here. Like when I think about all the like the plot stuff and spree, and it's just like it's two for one the format. So maybe spot removal like is a it's a necessary evil, but it may not be that much of a priority in draft.
That's my gut read going into it. Obviously, we haven't played with the set yet at all, but that would be my take on the rule. But the tough thing is that it all looks fairly efficient. Like the good ones look like removal you should want. Do you know what
right?
I mean?
Like explosive derailment, like 3-mana deal 4 is just like killing anything in the set. Well, and that's what makes me excited about the counterspell Phantom Interference is that it stops a lot of the ETBs. And so you're sort of like, yes, it's a 1-for-1, but it's like a preventative 2-for-1 if you can counter something.
Yes. This podcast is sponsored by Squarespace, the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. Whether you're just starting out or managing a growing brand, Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time, all in one place, all on your terms.
Back when I wanted to start a website for LOL as a spot for us to have all our content in one easy to access location, I thought for sure I was going to have to hire someone to design it. But thanks to Squarespace, I was able to do it all myself. It has an incredibly easy to navigate backend so that even a tech noob like me could make it work.
With Fluid Engine, the next generation website editor from Squarespace, it's never been easier for anyone to unlock unbreakable creativity. Choose your website starting point and customize every design detail with reimagined drag-and-drop technology for desktop or mobile.
Easily launch your website and get discovered fast with integrated, optimized SEO tools so you show up more often to more people and grow the way you want.
Measure your end-to-end online performance with powerful website and seller analytics. Get insights on top traffic sources, understand how your reach is growing, and learn where to focus new engagement. It's all the data you need to scale your brand or business, fully integrated and clearly displayed.
Wow, if Ben is talking about data, you know it's serious. You can also sell exclusive content on your site by adding a paywall to sell memberships or courses, or sell files your customers can download like PDFs, music, or ebooks.
There's so many community-created sites in the MTG space that we can't remember what we did without, like Scryfall, 17 Lands, now MTG Scribe. Maybe you have the next great idea, and Squarespace can help you make that dream a reality.
Check out squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/LOL to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. And now, back to the show.
All right, that takes us on to the next section of the crash course here. We talk about new and returning mechanics. So we outlined what all these mechanics did last week. So if you missed that episode, go check it out. Taking a look at Outlaws, the Warm Pea, there are 46 Outlaws.
So you're just fully on Warm Pea. You just abandoned Ramp and you went with the masses, the children, and you said, yeah, Warm Pea is funny. I like that.
The people have spoken, and I listen, I got to relate to my students, you know? Like, yeah. they're saying Warm Pea, I got to say Warm Pea.
I see how it is.
So, the Outlaws are concentrated in Grixis, as we would expect, based on the draft archetypes that WotC has given us. So, there's 4 white Outlaws, 10 blue, 13 black, 9 red, 4 green, 5 gold, and 1 colorless. The payoffs really are heavily in the gold cards and at black. So, both of the red, black, gold uncommons are excellent. We talked about those last week, Vile Smasher and At Knife Point. There's one that is, I think, going to be great in any black deck, really, which is Rakish Crew. That's 2 and a black for the enchantment. When it ETBs, you make a mercenary token. And whenever an outlaw you control dies, each opponent loses 1 life and you gain 1 life. Have super high hopes for Rakish Crew. And one we haven't talked about yet is Hellspur Brute, which is 4 and a red for a 5/4 at uncommon. It's got affinity for outlaws, so it costs 1 less for each Warm Pea creature you control. And it's got trample. I'll stop.
No, it's fine. It's fine. I deserve it. This card almost made my top red uncommons. I think this is scary. And maybe it's because I've been playing this artifact remix and like affinity for artifacts is pretty darn good. But I don't know, like if you can just drop, like if you go, I don't know, 2-drop, 3-drop, there's also in red, there's Prickly Pear, right? Which is 2 warm peas for the price of one card. So if you go two drop into that, into double spell with this as a two mana 5/4, like, how do you lose?
Indeed. I mean, some of that good removal floating around, certainly steer clear on your Hellspur Brute is going to be quite sad.
That's fair. That's fair.
But I think just thinking about Outlaws as a mechanic and how invested we should be in them, this is truly red-black typal, I think, from what I can tell.
Yeah.
Other than, I think, Rakish Crew gives you outs to be like black-white outlaws or blue-black outlaws. But really, the good payoffs are the two red-black gold uncommons. And then there's like smaller synergies sprinkled in, but nothing that you really care about needing to worry about outlaws enough, other than if you are straight red-black or have drafted a Rakish Crew.
Just made me think, because I am all tuned up to pod play, that something like Shoot the Sheriff is gonna be better in pod play, right? Because if you're a black drafter, that is one less black drafter that you're going to face at the table. And it sounds like if you're not drafting black, that you're going to have more targets for Shoot the Sheriff.
For sure. Yeah, I think so.
All right. Next up, we have Committing a Crime. Very excited about this. There are 18 cards that care about you committing a crime, mostly in blue black, with some slight red overlap, and most of them are incidental bonuses that make your card slightly better. Big payoff, super excited about Intimidation Campaign. This is one blue black enchantment. When it ETBs, each opponent loses a life, you gain a life, and you draw a card. And then whenever you commit a crime, you can return Intimidation Campaign to its owner's hand. Card just seems busted in half to me.
Yeah, card's going to be very good unless the format is blisteringly fast, and it does not look blisteringly fast to me.
I agree.
The other big payoff is the red-black uncommon at Knife Point. It's an enchantment. As long as it's your turn, outlaws you control have first strike. You don't care about that part so much, but whenever you commit a crime, create a 1-1 red mercenary creature token. That part you do care about a lot. So I could see some blue-black decks really wanting to splash at Knife Point. I mean, it's also going to be great in black, right, obviously.
And just remind folks, committing a crime is basically just like reaching across and even thinking about touching your opponent in any way. So if you're targeting them, targeting something they control, whatever. So we've got the crime lands, the ETB tapped lands that deal damage, obviously removal, interaction. And I just think committing crimes is going to happen pretty naturally in your good blue-black or Grixis decks, you know?
Yeah, and I think that lines up with them all mostly being some slight incidental bonuses. Like, I don't think you're going to have to build a committing a crime deck. Like, it's just going to happen if you're in the Grixis colors.
Well, and there might be, you know, I want to caution against us. People are going to come away from this episode and be like, Lords Limited said removal is bad in this format already. It's like, okay, well, let's all relax. But I also think, like,
we did say that, to be fair. We're getting aggregated.
We definitely did say that. Thank you for listening and paying attention. But also, there might be a bit of a use every piece of the buffalo here because your removal might be better when you care about committing crimes, right? If you're like, okay, obviously 1-for-1 removal, whatever, but the more that I care about targeting my opponent's stuff, the more I'm going to want that removal in my deck.
Yes. All right, that takes us on to mounts. There are only 10 mounts at Common and Uncommon.
And they all stink. Sorry, no.
That's not true. They are in the Naya colors. 4 of them are green, 3 white, 2 red. And then you've got Congregation Griff. That's the green-white Uncommon. That's the 1/4 flyer with lifelink. It's kind of absurd. And then big payoff for drafting some mounts is Miriam Herd Whisperer, the other green-white gold Uncommon. Green-white for a 3/2, and it pumps your mounts and vehicles with a +1/+1 counter whenever they attack. And it gives them hexproof during your turn.
Next up, we have Plot. If you listened last week, you know we're both really excited about this. 25 cards with Plot, which lets you, you know, pay a cost to exile the spell and then cast it for free on a later turn. This is pretty spread. It looks like it's concentrated in Teemer, but so 6 blue, red, and green, and then 3 black and 2 white. And Plot ties into several of the themes of the archetype. So certainly blue-green is big plot, right? So casting your spells, big spells for cheaper, as we see from the blue-green signpost 2-drop. But also blue-red cares about double spelling. Well, plotting lets you set up a double spell on a later turn pretty easily. And blue-white cares about not casting spells from your hand on a turn. So if you plot, well, that's a turn where you're not casting a spell from your hand because you spent mana to plot. And casting a spell from exile after you've plotted it also still ties into that theme quite nicely.
Yeah, and I think both you and I from our conversations last week are hugely high on plot, and I think it's really going to reward sequencing in a big way. So
yes.
The number one thing I think that you're going to need to do with plotting is make sure that you have defensive speed or cheap interaction in your deck so that you don't fall behind. Because at its core, right, plot is giving you a power bonus by taking a hit in tempo. So if you haven't like prepared to accommodate for that hit in tempo that you're about to get, you're gonna be falling far enough behind that potentially the power of plotting is not going to be enough to catch you back up. I still do think plot's very powerful though, but I think you're especially going to maximize it if you can, you know, maybe get a cheap one or a two drop down that's going to be able to block high toughness and then start plotting. But it really does seem to be the headliner mechanic to me in terms of the plot cards are the most pushed in terms of power, just intrinsic power at common and uncommon as far as limited Magic the Gathering cards go.
It'd be great if white gave the plot decks like some sort of cheap, maybe one mana way to at instant speed deal two damage to an attacking creature, you know,
something I agree. Something like Steer Clear.
Something maybe. Like Steer Clear might be really good to just like be a nice role player and slot into those decks. We talked last week about red-green creatures, power four or greater. We were hopeful. And now that the full spoiler is out, are you still hopeful?
I am not. That's you set me up. That's the third. This is the third little bullet point there in our show notes. I'm a little dubious about this archetype.
I don't read ahead. I don't read ahead. That was just unnatural. Okay. Well, what happened?
I think we saw it all. I think Wizards of the Coast just hung it all out there during preview season, and I was hoping for more, and there was no more.
It's like when you see a trailer for a movie and like all the jokes are in the trailer. Yes. You're like, this movie looks really funny. You're like, oh no, that was the movie. Okay.
Yeah. So there are 11 cards with power four or greater naturally, which is not that many.
That's not that many. Yeah.
They're four red, five green, two red green. So they did a good job. I mean, there are other creatures outside of red and green with power four greater. Yeah. 11 in red green, to be clear. There's two big payoffs. The red gold uncommons aren't really payoffs in a sense. They're more enablers to help you have good four power creatures. But the two payoffs, the first one is very powerful. Scalestorm Summoner. This is two in a red for a 3/3 uncommon. Whenever it attacks, you make a 3/1 red dinosaur creature token if you control a creature with power four or greater. So you're trying to play this on three, curve into a four drop on four or some four power creature on turn four and then attack with this. And if you do, that's really going to get the ball rolling. The problem is it's a little all in. Like, you really need it to sequence perfectly. Like, you need Scalestorm Summoner on three. You need the four power thing on four. You need your opponent to not have removal. And if they do, your plan just falls apart a little bit. And the other payoff is Beastbond Outcaster. This is the Sroulf's Packmate at home. This is two and a green for a 3/3 uncommon. Whenever ETBs, if you control a creature with power four or greater, you draw a card, and it's got plot for one and a green.
Next up, an archetype that's near and dear to my heart is Black-White Sacrifice, but actually might secretly just be tokens. We've got repeatable sacrifice outlets. There's the signpost that we're really excited about. Baron Bertram Greywater, two white black for a 3/4. Whenever one or more tokens enter the battlefield under your control, you make a 1/1 black vampire rogue creature token with lifelink. Triggers only once each turn. You can pay one and a black, sack another creature artifact, draw card. Excited to pair that with Treasure Dredger, one and a black 2/2. One tap, pay a life, create a treasure token and a vampire if you have Bertram in play. Pretty sick.
Yeah, that was the thing that stood out to me as I was going through it, because I just had Black-White Sacrifice in my head and I was searching for sacrifice, and there were only three repeatable sacrifice outlets.
They're pretty clunky. Two others.
Yeah, they're not great. And then I was like, oh, I get it. Like, you're trying to trigger Baron's first ability, and then that sets you up to use those tokens to sacrifice to a second ability. But I think more than anything, Black-White is tokens. I think you're using the Treasure Dredger. There's a lot of cards that die into tokens, and then maybe you sacrifice them, they die into a token, and you're getting another token. I think Black-White actually really looks like a very cool synergistic archetype, and this is going to be, I think, Rakish Crew's best home. That's the Bastion of Remembrance for Outlaws. That card seems absurd in Black-White Sacrifice to me.
Yep.
That takes us on to Green-Black Graveyard Recursion. There are only two ways to mill at common, and they're both pretty good cards, which is not ideal. So first is Patient Naturalist. This is two and a green for a 2/3. When ETBs, mill three cards, put a land card from among the milled cards into your hand. If you can't, create a treasure token. And like, a bit weird that I say both of the cards are good, which is bad news for you, but it's bad news because other people are going to be poaching them from you
right
in the draft, like even if you've identified that green black is where you're supposed to be.
Right.
And the other one is Desperate Bloodseeker. This one may be a little less desirable.
I don't know. It commits a crime.
Yeah. One in a black for a 2/2 vampire with lifelink. When ETB's target player mills two cards. I think the one saving grace of this is that it is not an outlaw. So yeah, like your red black deck is probably not going to want this. Blue black probably will.
Yeah. Yeah.
At uncommon, there's another one that mills. This is Stubborn Burrow Fiend. One in a green for a 2/2. When it becomes saddled for the first time each turn, mill two cards. Then it gets +X/+X, where X is the number of creature cards in your graveyard, and it's got a saddle cost of 2.
Important to note that this doesn't have to attack.
Correct.
You can just saddle it. And it has to happen at sorcery speed, but you can just saddle it. And then you can also see, like, oh, as it get, what's the bonus it's getting? And then maybe it does have attacks. But if you just want to have a way to repeatably mill yourself, this is a way to do it.
Yeah. And then we saw Rise of the Varmints. That's the make 2/1s equal to the number of creature cards in your graveyard last week. And then another one here that is a banger. Hollow Marauder. Yeah. Says 6 and a black for a 4/2 uncommon with flying. Costs 1 less to cast for each creature card in your graveyard. When it ETBs, any number of target opponents each discard a card. For each of those opponents who didn't discard a card with mana value 4 or greater, draw a card.
I mean, you don't even, this is just a good black card. Like, you don't have to worry about, like, working on making this that much cheaper. Like, if this is a 5-mana 4/2 flyer, your opponent discards a card, and if it's not a banger of a card, you get to draw a card.
Yeah, potential 3-for-1 action. That card is absurd. I graded that pretty lowly, and I saw your grade, and then I read it again, and I was like, oh, I missed the 3-for-1 potential.
Yeah, that card's huge. That's cheating, Ben. That's I already am starting up a point, it sounds like.
Yeah, you won Hollow Marauder. You talked me up. But I think this deck, I love Rise of the Varmints. Like, I want to be excited about this deck, but they're just... It's really going to come together with Patient Naturalists and Desperate Bloodseekers, I think. Without those two cards, it's going to be tough for it to pop off.
Is it something like it's spider spawning? Like, it's secretly a blue-green, splash black kind of deck? Like, is there another color that maybe helps out Rise of the Varmints better? Not really.
No, there's not. Like, cause that's what I was thinking. Maybe that 2/4 that mills 3 can help you turbo it out. But yeah, that's only your opponent. Oh. You can't target yourself. I was really bummed.
It takes us on to sweepers. So there's a couple mini sweepers at uncommon. We talked about Neutralize the Guards already, 2 and a black instant. Creatures target opponent controls get -1/-1 until end of turn, Surveil 2. And then there's Caught in the Crossfire, which is a spree card. Starts off with red. You can add 1 to have it deal 2 damage to each outlaw creature, or add 1 to have it deal 2 damage to each non-outlaw creature. So potentially some like variability, like one-sidedness to it if you're outlawing, your opponent isn't, or vice versa, or maybe just kill everything small. And then a bit of an all-in here at Mythic, Final Showdown, single white spree card. So the wrath part of it is 3 white adds to it to destroy all creatures. Now that's a lot. That's 6 mana and triple white, so not cheap and not easy to cast. Again, some variability of the spree cost. +1, all creatures lose all abilities until end of turn. +1, choose a creature you control that gains indestructible until end of turn. So the big, massive way to do this is for 7 mana, you can save one of your creatures, right? Give it indestructible, save your best creature, and then kill everything else. So some Dune Blast vibes there for sure, which is quite powerful. And also has the possibility of just being a trick early in the game to save one of your creatures from a removal spell.
Yeah, that card's great. Lastly here, we've got Rush of Dread. This is 1 black for a sorcery with spree. At +1, target opponent sacrifices half the creatures they control rounded up. At +2, target opponent discards half the cards in their hand rounded up. And at another +2, target opponent loses half their life rounded up. That is
Does this count as a sweeper? Not really.
I mean, it's not really a sweeper, but powerful card.
If you have 3 creatures and your opponent spends 4 mana and you have to sacrifice 2 of them,
a barter in blood on steroids.
Yeah, with like, and then just like upside from there. Now again, like the longer the game goes on, if you have tokens or whatever, it's hard for me to evaluate a card like this. It's going to range from backbreaking to, oh, I sack a couple mercenary tokens, big deal.
Yeah, I could see that.
Next up we have Mana Fixing. So there's actually a good bit of it. There's treasures. So usually we just look at like green cards, artifacts, and lands. Well, there's some treasure makers, mostly in red. We talked about that one in black. I believe there's a trick in green that makes a treasure as well. And then green has a handful of, you know, ways to fetch up some basics slash deserts. The crime lands from your library put them into play. A Mana Dork and Hard Bristle Bandit. There's some artifacts as well. We've got our potential Golden Egg here and Silver Deputy. 2-mana 1/2 Mercenary. When it ETBs, you can search your library for a basic land card or a desert card. Reveal it, then shuffle and put it on top, and it has the mercenary ability of tapping to give a creature +1/+0 until end of turn at sorcery speed. What do you think? 2-mana 1/2 is rough.
It's not great. I wish it were a 2/1.
I do too. And then we also have lands. We've talked about the crime lands as being the ETB tapped duels that ping your opponent when they come into play. And there's also just like a nice Evolving Wilds variant that's a desert, Mirage Mesa. Enters the battlefield tapped, and as it enters, you choose a color, and it taps out a mana of the chosen color. That's huge. That's big game right there.
It's big game, and you don't have to shuffle on paper. Even bigger game.
Well, and you right don't have to shuffle on paper, and you also don't have to put duels. Like it's possible that you can put like, or you don't have to put basics in your deck. It's possible that you can, you know, have 2 off color crime lands plus Mesa, and that's your splash. That's free real estate, baby.
Yeah. Yes. Definitely better than Evolving Wilds in that sense.
Yeah.
Takes us on to looking at incidental life gain. It looks like there's not a ton of it. There's 12 cards with one shot or possible repeatable ways to gain life. Best of them, Take Up the Shield. I'm sure we're going to be talking about that in the top commons. 1 and a white for an instant. This is a reprint. Put a +1/+1 counter on target creature. It gains a lifelink and indestructible until end of turn. And then there's 7 creatures that have or can gain or grant lifelink. But I from this, it looks like life gain we don't anticipate is going to be a huge part of the format. Is that fair to say?
I don't see it that way, but it's possible. It also then may make the few, you know, there are some creatures that have life gain. There's like Prairie Dog is very good, lifelink rather. And so it may make those even better because they're so rare to come up. The last thing we want to look at here is mana sinks. Does Spree count as a mana sink? No, right?
No, it does not. No.
We're looking at repeatable places to put mana, and there's quite a bit. So the usual spread of like, there's about 6 creatures that have pump for either themselves or your team, about 12 things with activated abilities that are either, you know, Surveil. We talked about there's a Bad Tapper, there's Sack Outlets, there's, you know, loops potentially with Tomb Trawler to put a card from your graveyard on the bottom of your library, that sort of thing. And then 3 pieces of equipment as well. So it does look like you'll have places to put mana. For sure.
I think a big difference, though, is usually there's a mechanic that, like, we say in the mana sinks, like, this mechanic, like, everything you do with this mechanic is a mana sink.
Right, and food that's, or whatever.
Right, well, not even
clues.
Food, yes, clues or, yeah, like a kicker-esque mechanic. And Spree is kind of that, but not really.
No.
Like, plot is truly it. But
plot's not a mana sink. It's just, like, spending your mana in a different way.
Sure, but when we initially started this category,
yes,
it was because of Ixalan, where it was super easy to run out of gas, and there were like 2 good mana sinks in the whole format.
Mm-hmm.
And from what we've seen from the plot creatures, you're not going to run out of things to do, like with everything being a 2-for-1.
That's the real deal, yeah.
If that is our point of view, like how many things have mana sinks and all that stuff is a little bit irrelevant. That's more the spirit of this category, right? Is mm-hmm. Are you going to be in danger of running out of things to do? And I think the answer to that for this set looks to be no to me.
But not necessarily because of these. It might just be because everything's a 2-for-1.
Right. Yes. All right. That takes us on to our grading differences. Gloves are coming off. The fisticuffs are here.
It's a duel.
Oh, it's a duel.
10 paces, baby.
Ooh, 10 paces. I blew it.
Yeah.
All right. So before we get into our grading differences, we're going to go over the classic limited resources grading scale, the gold standard in limited set reviews everywhere. So first up are the A's. These are your bombs, your game winners, cards that are good in many situations, especially when you're behind. Some of the best cards in the set, like bomb rares and hyper-efficient spells. Cards like Aurelia's Vindicator, Izoni's Center of the Web, Ezreum, Agency, Chief. You saw none of those yesterday in the MTGO sealed tournament, correct?
I played it. There's a sealed PTQ on Magic Online yesterday. 10 rounds of Swiss, woof. This was really my first time playing MKM sealed proper. Like, day one, like playing best of one on day one of the Arena Open doesn't really count. And I hadn't really done sealed otherwise. Woof. Big yikes for me, I will say. My opponents either had Ezreum, Aurelia, or Tulsimir. Sometimes multiples of one, sometimes a combo. In, I kid you not, every single round. I was like, I got a nice little blue-red deck splashing War Leader's Call. This seems fine. And I actually managed to rattle off a positive record somehow without that kind of power. But oof, play boosters for sealed. I'm not sure I'm on board right now.
I hear that.
The Bees are strong pulls into a color, make you want to play that color, reasons to be in a particular color or combo of colors. The best commons and good uncommons, Novice Inspector, Perimeter Enforcer, and Evidence Examiner. Shout out to Blue-Green.
Shout out to Blue-Green. The Seas are your solid playables, the meat and potatoes of a limited deck, role player creatures, and normal removal spells. Cards like On the Job, Topiary Panther, or Slimy Dual Leech.
Slimy Dual Leech. Wow. Getting a bump up to C. The Ds are sometimes playable, below average, 22nd, 23rd type cards. And these cards just, I mean, it's so funny. Like, Ds are, it's exactly what they are, but you think about them as so bad. But they're not. Like 6 years ago, these are like C plus cards in some sets, you know. Due Diligence, not necessarily, but Griffnaut Tracker for sure. And wow, I can't believe this. Night Drinker Maroi. Just one final dagger. Okay, that's fair.
I couldn't help myself. The Fs are your unplayables, cards you should never put in your deck, or weird rares, cards like Reenact the Crime, Anzrag's Rampage, and Expedited Inheritance.
Sideboard cards are cards that don't make the main deck, though maybe all of these did, but when you board them in can be quite good. Cards like Make Your Move, Pick Your Poison, and Cease and Desist.
Takes us to Build Around cards, which are cards that don't do much on their own, but when you build around them can be good to great. Cards like Insidious Roots or Chalk Outline.
The return of the build arounds is here. Synergy cards are cards that are not good enough to build around, but provide good synergy if they're in the right deck. Wow, just right there, pairing with the Roots and the Chalk Outline, we have Rubble Belt Maverick, Gravestone Strider, and Snarling Gorehound.
Lastly, we've got Diminishing Return cards, which are cards where the second copy is significantly worse than the first copy. Stuff like Macabre Reconstruction, Unauthorized Exit, or Call a Surprise Witness.
Yeah, so when you see in our spreadsheet things like BA, that's Build Around, SYN is Synergy, and DR is Diminishing Returns. All right, let's get into it. I said I didn't want to talk about cards we talked about last week, but we have to talk about Armored Armadillo, single white 0/4 with Ward 1. And you can pay 3 and a white to have it get plus X plus O until end of turn, where X is its toughness. I gave this a D minus, you gave this a D plus. Talk me up.
Yeah, I like this card specifically in plot decks. I think getting on board early with something that can block well like this, it's 4 toughness. It's going to be annoying to try to attack through. It's going to stop your opponent's 2-drop, 3-drop that are on the ground. And I think plot is just going to be, don't fall behind. And if you don't fall behind, you're going to get so much of a boost from your plot cards that I think it's going to be pretty trivially easy to win the game. So I think this is going to have a home specifically in blue-white decks.
I think you're just so sad to put this in any deck. I think you're really upset if Armored Armadillo is in your deck, because I just think you're like, it's basically Pillarfield Ox or whatever. It's just white 0/4. The rest of the text does not matter. You're never activating this. Maybe there's a turn where you've plotted the turn prior and then you get to cast something for 0. But ideally on those turns, you're double spelling. You're able to like do something with your mana that isn't potentially plus 4 plus 0 on this stupid thing. I stand by. I think you're really going to be not pleased to put this in your deck. It's never going to be, and I know that's reflective of your D plus grade. You're never going to like feel like you miss it. But I also don't think, I think you're ideally looking to cut it from every blue white deck as well.
I mean that remains to be seen, I guess. That's the difference in the grades, is that like I think this actively has a home where you're going to want to get on. Do you agree with the premise that you want to get on board early in blue white plot?
I totally agree, but I don't think the difference between 1-drop and 2-drop is that big of a deal. And they're 2-drops. Like the next one we're going to talk about just does something so much better than what Armored Armadillo could ever hope to do. They're like, you're just not going to care about this.
Sure. All right. Next up is Outlaw Medic. We are keeping in the trend of me being optimistic and you being pessimistic. So Outlaw Medic is 1 and a white for a 1/3 with lifelink at common. Whenever it dies, you draw a card. You give this a D+. I give this a C+. I think this card is going to be annoying as all heck to play against.
Really?
So, yeah. Because again, in blue white, or just when you play it, like it's going to put the ground to a halt, or at least slow your opponent a little bit. You feel great blocking every opposing creature with this card.
For sure.
It's got lifelink, can peck in there maybe if, whatever, your opponent misses their 2-drop, get a little life gain swing going early. It's going to have a home in black-white sacrifice. You don't mind sacrificing it there to draw a card. just think this card looks very strong to me.
Yeah, very strong is a maybe where we're different. Like everything you're saying, I'm like, yeah, that all checks out. I just can't imagine prioritizing it in the draft. But maybe that's wrong. Maybe C minus is more, C plus I think is just way, way, way too high. But I could see bumping it up to like role player status of like, this is something that really slots in some places. But C plus is like top common territory. Okay. I don't think this is that.
Nah, I think top commons these days are B minuses. But anyway, so yeah, I agree. C plus is probably a little aggressive. Maybe C minus. But I think there do look to be non-aggressive white decks. And I think if your white deck is not aggressive, this is going to be your two drop of choice.
Takes us on to the uncommons. I'm excited to talk about this one. Getaway Glamour. White for a spree card. So you can add one exile target non-token creature. Return to the battlefield under its owner's control at the beginning of the next end step. Or you can add two to destroy target creature if no other creature has greater power. For the first time ever, I've graded a card higher than you. I gave it a B. You gave it a C. So this, I think, is my top. I think it might be my top white uncommon. And maybe I'm just wildly off base here. But my feeling is that, so for three mana, this is just like kills the thing that you want most of the time. Because it doesn't have to have the greatest power. So it can, like, if you have a three power thing and there's other three power things and that's the thing I want to kill, totally fine. I can still kill that. But then the flexibility here of it can be a way to just save my creature from removal spell for two mana. And I can also do it. I can get a two for one. I can respond to your removal spell by saving my thing and killing something of yours for the low cost of four mana. I think this card is bonkers.
Yeah, you're right. I'm way too low. I think I was only thinking about it. I was not thinking about the potential upside of blinking something that has an ETB. Also, yeah. There's a lot of flexibility here. I'm wrong. You've talked me up. I'll go B minus.
Love it.
Next up, we've got Frontier Seeker. This is one and a white for a 2/1. You can look at the top five cards of your library. You can reveal a mount, creature card, or a plains card from among them and put it into your hand. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. You give us a C. I give us a B minus. This card is bread and butter. 2/1 in a green-white deck. How is this a C?
You said it, not me. You said it. Mounts are bad. Like, so, and even in a mount deck, this can whiff. Like, what do you got? Like, 10, like, I mean, not easily, I guess, but you have to be heavy white, and you have to all have a lot of mounts, and then that's only getting you up to, what, 15 hits? I think this card is, like, fine. That's why I give it a C. I don't think it's, like, unplayable or anything, but B minus is this is okay. Not a pull into white.
Yeah, maybe it's not a pull into white, but it's a C plus, and it's a good. You're never cutting this from a white deck.
No, probably not. That seems like a C to me.
Never cutting. That's a C plus at least.
Okay,
we'll get our grading scale figured out eventually, listeners.
We'll figure it out. It's fine. We've only been doing this for 6 years. Sheriff of Safe Passage is next. 2 and a white for a 0/0. It enters the battlefield with a +1/+1 counter on it, plus an additional +1/+1 counter on it for each other creature you control, and you can plot it for 1 and a white. I give this a C minus. You give this a D. I can give this a D.
This card is horrible.
This card's bad. I was, you know, it's got some
fold.
It's got some variability. I was waiting. I just was expecting you to have a higher grade than me. I was like, what could he possibly say about this? But no, never read ahead. You gave it a D. Yeah, I think this card's bad too. D is fine.
All right, that takes us on to blue commons. First up, we've got Geyser Drake here. This is 2 and a blue for a 2/3 with flying. As long as it's not your turn, spells you cast cost 1 less to cast. You give us a C plus. I give us a C minus.
Truth might be a little bit in the middle, and I don't feel super strongly about this. I do think like 3 mana for a 2/3 flyer is like this not being a 2/2 flyer, I think is big game. Like it can block Holy Cow, whatever. But then this just slots into the, you know, either you're double spelling with instants in blue red, you're plotting with blue white, and so you're, you know, plotting on your turn, and then you have mana to spend cheaply on your opponent's turn. Like how much mana do you need to save for this to be like really good, like for this to be like a 3 mana 2/3 flying kind of mana dork, like once, twice? It just doesn't seem that hard to me.
It seems like you're jumping through a lot of hoops for not.
What are the much hoops? Like
it's not really like, are you gonna have room for this in your blue white plot deck? Like that's more focused on like the choking points are gonna be getting enough plot spells and getting enough instants. Like,
and
are
three
you really
mana
gonna
is,
have...
three mana? You might be wanting to plot already. Right?
Yeah, that's what I think. Like, I think in those decks, like you're needing to get on board early, and then you're going to want to start plotting turn three, turn four, turn five. So I don't really see it in blue white, mm-hmm. and then like yeah, blue red maybe, but this is not like helping you double. I guess it's helping you double spell on your opponent's turn, but. If you've got that many good instants, you're already in great shape with your blue-red deck.
Oh, this card just... That is a bad argument. If you've got good instants, you don't want them to be cheaper. Like, what are you talking about?
So, well, like the blue-red card, for example, the gold card. It's blue-red, deal two. Like,
okay, so Explosive Derailment is red, add two to deal four. So then this is two mana, deal four.
No, right? Because is Spree part of the cost?
Yeah. What would it be part of?
I don't know, an additional ability, an additional tax.
Yeah, it's a tax. Sorry, it's a new triggered ability, which is a tax.
Yeah,
I can go C. Like, I'm not crazy about this. C minus seems a little low to me.
Okay. Next up, we've got Daring Thunder Thief, which is 3 and a blue for a 4/4 with flash. ETB's tapped. You give us a C minus. I give us a D.
This is a 3 mana 4/4 with my Drake.
Yeah, you can put all the terrible cards in your deck.
This can't be bad. This is huge.
It is large in the format. I will
like
give
blue
you that.
Blue getting a 4 mana 4/4 seems egregious to me, and I just don't think it can be filler. Like, I don't think it can be a D. Like, I gave it a C minus. It's on the cusp, but this card demands attention, I think, for how chunky it is.
Okay, if you do 100 drafts in the format. You do 100 drafts in the format, I'm setting the line at like 2.5 for number
as
of Daring
number
Thunder
of
Thieves that hit the battlefield.
Oh, just number of Daring Thunder Thieves that hit the battlefield. I thought you were going to say number of decks that this is in. That, I think, seems fair to me.
Then that's a D.
I think that's true, but I'm going to hold it. I don't know, because isn't there a world... Okay, hold on.
We had him down, and then he wriggled out of it.
I just think, like, Okay, if we're going to use the 100. In the 100 lifetimes that we live in the different universes, doesn't one of those have a universe where Daring Thunder Thief just rules in the format?
Because it's awesome.
Because
in the
it's
format.
Just huge. It's like, so I'm just trying to like balance for that possibility with my C minus.
I appreciate that about you.
Next up, we have in the uncommons Deep Muck Desperado, 2 and a blue for a 2/4 mercenary. Whenever you commit a crime, each opponent mills 3 cards. This ability triggers only once each turn. You got me all hot and bothered about the mill crab. And then you said, and also, did you think that this creature type was hominid from our youth?
It is from our youth.
Yeah, from like Fallen Empires. I think I just like misread the, because you see how the R and the I are so close together? It kind of looks like an N. I think
I knew it was a homerid.
No, I think I got deep faked from when I was 7 and thought that this was hominid. Anyway, you got me excited about the mill crab, and then you juked me. You gave it a build around D.
Yeah, you gave it a build around C plus. This is like a week 5. You're gonna have fun card in the format, I think. I will be thrilled if it is actually
if it's that. Yeah, that's probably
No. If it ends up being a build around C plus, like if it's actually right to go after some of the time.
Yeah. I guess it's just so hard, especially with there being more uncommons. You're going to see this less, so you're not going to get like 3 of them. Right? That like that's the thing for like a niche uncommon like this in the past is that you really want multiples of them, but you're just with 100 uncommons existing total with basically the same amount of slots in the packs. You just see it less.
And like it's going to die to removal. It's very like this is the only thing that does what it does.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
It's very hard to be all in on that plan.
Yep. All right, I'm in.
Next up, we've got Nimble Brigand, 2 and a blue for a 1/3 at uncommon. Can't be blocked if you've committed a crime this turn, and whenever it deals combat damage to a player, draw a card. Scroll Thief with upside, baby. You gave us a C, I gave us a B minus. I love a good Scroll Thief.
I knew you were going to grade this highly. You love low-statted draw card.
I love a good Scroll Thief. What can I say?
Yeah.
But what's not to love about this card? You're going to put this in a blue-black deck, and it's going to draw you a card every single turn. It's incredible.
Yeah. So what's not to love about this card is that it's a 3 mana 1/3. You have to give it some knocks for that, I think. Like, so last time we saw this effect was Gateway Sneak, I think, in Ravnica Allegiance. That was 3 mana, 1/3. It had the same text, scroll thief text of if it hits your opponent, you draw a card. And its unblockable clause was if a gate entered the battlefield under your control, which is, I think, ostensibly harder. Like, that's going to happen less than committing crimes, maybe. I don't know. Like, sometimes you don't want to attack. Sometimes you don't commit crimes. And then those times are when this is a 3 mana, 1/3. And that's pretty bad.
No. Yeah. Because the thing that you discount always about Scroll Thief that I love so much is, like, the game changes when this hits the battlefield. Like, you play this and your opponent's like, oh, can't let Scroll Thief hit me. And maybe they leave back a blocker. And then you, like, I love a Scroll Thief, and I think Nimble Brigand is great. I'm sticking with B minus.
You're right. I do always, and I'm surprised to hear it. I'm like, oh, that's true. He's describing a game state that I hadn't occurred to me. I can go up to C plus. You're gonna be sad about this card some amount of the time, though. I'm not gonna be sad about this next card. Marauding Sphinx, 3 blue-blue for a 3/5 Sphinx Rogue, has flying, vigilance, and ward 2. And whenever you commit a crime, surveil 2, this ability triggers only once each turn. I give this a B, you gave this a C plus. This thing's just so huge. Like, I know we're not supposed to grade 5 drops highly because they're like a dime a dozen. Maybe this is very good, but like there's probably a common that's like just as good, whatever. This has so many words on it. 5 mana, 3/5 flying vigilance, ward 2. How do you get through this?
I mean, it is large. You're gonna have to spend a lot of mana to kill it. It's gonna be annoying. I go up to B minus. I was trying to temper it at 5 mana for C plus, but I mean, I see the power there. I think my grade was reflective of it costing 5 mana, but I think once you get it on the battlefield, it's going to be really annoying. B seems a tad aggressive to me.
It's probably aggressive, but like, I think part of one of the things I want to try and do with my grades is like, yes, I want to be reflective of we got to stop grading 5 drops and 4 drops. Like, oh man, and this one was so good, and this one was so good. It's like, yeah, but they're all good, and so it doesn't matter. This one feels cut above the rest enough to me that I wanted to give it a little bit of weight.
Yeah, I like it. Take us on to black. Our first common here is Nozomi Linkbreaker. This is black for a 1/1. Whenever it dies, you make a 1/1 mercenary creature token. You gave us a C plus. I gave us a D plus.
Now, I am a little less excited about this knowing how few one toughness creatures there are in the set. I think I graded this before doing that breakdown, so that might bump me down to like C, but I don't feel like I can fold because I think this is my number 3 black common, so I want to just hold tight on it. I don't know, 2 rectangles and good types. It's a warlock once, and then it's a mercenary, dies into a mercenary, so it's double the warm P. I think I'm just like, for all that for 1 mana, what's not to like?
This looks like a black-white only card to me.
Why? Black-red wants it.
Does it?
Yeah. Double the warm P.
I mean, maybe. This, I cannot imagine picking this very highly in draft. It's tough, well,
I'm going to need you to imagine it. Because that's the reality we're living in.
I think you're trying to manifest this being a C plus, and I just don't think it quite. I don't think it quite gets there.
Okay,
like I could maybe come up to C minus, but this is not like we've seen like a Shambling Ghoul type card or like the 1/1 that dies to give something -1/-1. Like your opponent, like you're not excited to block your opponent's 2/2 with this. Like what is this doing on the battlefield? Until it dies.
So many things. Like, that's why I give it a C plus, is that I don't know yet, but I know. it's like when I graded Gingerbrute highly, and I was like, look, I missed on Gingerbrute last time. I don't know what it does now, but I'm just going to go with it. And I got the same feeling about Linkbreaker. It's just like, I don't know what's going on, but I think I like it, and I'm excited to see it.
I hear that. And I wish you much fortune in your quest to break Nozomi Linkbreaker. All right, that takes us on to our next card, which is Raven of Fell Omens. 1 and a black for a 1/2 bird with flying. Whenever you commit a crime, each opponent loses 1 life and you gain 1 life. This ability triggers only once each turn.
You juked me again?
You gave us a build around C+. I gave us a D.
This isn't fair. You talked me up on cards last week. I grade the cards first, and then you swoop in to undercut me with a D. What happened?
This card's bad. We talked about it. We talked about it being bad last week. Like maybe, but it does not seem like it's going to get there to me.
I'm still kind of hopeful. We got to have some build arounds at common, right?
I mean, I am also hopeful, but a lot has to come together. You really need to get two of these to stick to the battlefield, and then chain committing crimes while also not being way far behind.
The crimes helps you not be behind because you gain some life.
You gain some life and you kill their things. I mean, listen, I'm going to be thrilled if there's a Raven of Fellow Omens deck, but I can't in good service, as you always say, recommend to our listeners that they go after a Raven of Fellow Omens deck.
That's fair. That's fair. I got to talk to you about this next one. Lively Dirge, one and a black for a spree spell. You can add one, search your library for a card, put it into your graveyard, then shuffle. Or you can add two to return up to two creature cards with total mana value 4 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. You gave this a C-. I gave my first F.
This card is not an F. And yes, I read all the way to the end of the card, and I know that it is mana value 4 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. I think if you get 2/2 drops back with this, you're going to be pretty happy. This is one card to return two things. This is going to get played in the black-green deck.
This card does not matter. And for 15-20% of the time where you do get to cast it as 4 mana, bring back 2/2 drops, which isn't even that good. Like, because everything is a 2-for-1. And I guess then if everything's a 2-for-1, then this is a 4-for-1 because your 2 drops are 2-for-1s, whatever. But like, then there's just going to be so many times where this is in your hand and does nothing. This card is bad.
But I would agree that it is not great. Like, I think it will get played over the course of the format.
Getting played and us telling people to play it are two different things.
Okay, sure. I agree. So C is aggressive. I will go down to a D. I've got my first. Let me ask you this. What's getting played more in the format? Lively Dirge or the stupid 3 and a blue 4/4 flash card?
The 3 and a blue 4/4 flash card actually is a card itself, whereas this is not. So I would say the 4/4.
Yeah, you're probably right. Okay, I'll go D. Lively Dirge.
So stubborn.
I'm going to cast this card.
Did you grade anything an F? Are you even capable?
I did.
Of such
things?
I gave
some Fs. I gave some Fs.
All right. Last up in black is Rictus Robber. This is 3 and a black for a 4/3 zombie rogue. When it enters the battlefield, if a creature died this turn, you make a 2/2 blue and black zombie rogue creature token. And has plot for 2 and a black. I gave this a C, you gave this a synergy B. The synergy aspect of it, I didn't quite consider because of, I assume you're talking about like the sacrifice stuff.
Yeah, the black-white sacrifice. You're going to be able to trigger this on your own. This card is incredible. And it's got plot. You're going to plot on 3. And then if you can sacrifice something on turn 4 for value, like you've got the single.
With what?
So the single black sack a thing, draw 2 cards. There's a billion ways to do it.
Sacked your 2 drop. I'm just saying, like, you're envisioning this magical turn 4.
I'm going to have the Nozumi Link Breaker that I drafted very highly, obviously.
Let's go. Now we're talking. I just think, like, again, on balance, how much better is this than other ways to spend 4 mana in the format or to plot for 3 mana in the format, as it were? Like, I just, like, I think this is good. I just don't think this is a pull into black by any stretch.
I think you're underrating how big of a swing it's going to be when this hits the battlefield. So you plot it on 3. Let's say you're not even sacrificing something of yourself. Let's say you plot it on 3. Turn 4, you play like I shot the sheriff, kill their thing for 2 mana, play another 2 drop. This hits the battlefield 4/3 and a 2/2.
Yeah, that's huge. Like,
this card is a gigantic but board state swing.
But how much better is that than you affected the board on 3, then killed something on 4 and played a 2 drop and attacked with your 2 drop and your 3 drop, right? Like you're describing a board state that you're describing a sequence of events that is also good if you did something else for 3 mana on turn 3. And like the variation of how good that is yes, Rictus Robber it's better in that specific situation, but then there's also some amount of the time, I know I'm just a big negative guy, but that this is just a 4 mana 4/3. And that's not very good. So I just think we just got to balance that a little bit.
I don't think this is ever a 4-mana 4/3. Like, I think you are always plotting this on turn three. I don't think you are ever not plotting this.
Well, this is only in the scenario where it's in your opening hand. I agree. But there are times where it's not in your opening hand.
Sure. Yeah. It's going to be worse when you don't get a plotted on turn three. Definitely. Okay. But I think the up, like, what you're saying is how much better is the scenario I'm describing. I think when you plot this on turn three, It's got game-winning power level to it. I think it is significant, like, 3 mana to get a 4/3 and a 2/2.
Yes.
Is, like, an absurd Magic the Gathering card.
But you're not guaranteed it. And so what happens on turn four, like, so let's say you don't have a removal spell.
Yes.
What happens then? Your opponent just doesn't block your 2-drop. And so then you're not playing this because you want to get full value. So which is fine because it costs, it's 0. But then, so then you're not playing it on turn 4, right? It's just hanging out in exile zone for another turn.
I might run it out as a 3-mana 4/3, in which case I'm kind of sad. But like the upside to me is so good that I'm, and I'm going to have built my deck around it. Like, that's why I gave it a synergy B. I'm not okay. Just like throwing this in a random deck, but assuming I have ways to sacrifice stuff, which I will if I put this card in my deck.
And some Nezumi Link Breakers.
And some Nezumi Link Breakers and some removal spells. This card just looks, I cannot imagine this card not being a pull into black.
All right. You're passionate enough.
Like I would say I'm coming on board. Listen. I'm going to go so far as to say that 17 lands, actually, maybe I won't go so far as to say that 17 lands is going to love this card because people are going to not play with it.
The plot cards are all going to have worse stats than is reflective of our experience of it.
I'm going to say if you filter by top players on 17 lands, okay, that the data is going to love Rictus Robber.
Okay. I think that was a fruitful discussion. I'm on board. I don't see it yet, but your passion is infectious. Quick Draw is our first red card. Single red for an instant. Target creature you control gets ++1 and gains first strike until end of turn. Creatures target opponent controls lose first strike and double strike until end of turn. I give this a C+. You give this a D. I mean, like, 1-mana combat tricks.
Don't the red 1-mana combat tricks never get played and are never good?
I guess that's true. Like the +1/+0 first strike.
This is like +1/+0 and first strike.
And scry
except
one.
It's cool and flavorful. I think they gotcha with the Thunder Junction Quick Draw flavor. Damn,
they got me. They got me with the... There's so much text on this card. I was like, God, it's got to be good. All right. It's a D. Never mind.
Next up is Reckless Lackey. Red for a 1/2 with first strike and haste. Two in a red. Sacrifice it. Draw a card. Create a treasure token. You give us a C-. I gave us a C+. It is hard for me to believe that you love your black 1/1 that dies into a mercenary. And you do not give Reckless Lackey a C+. This is 1/2 first strike haste. Very aggressive. It's got good types. It's a pirate. And then when it's irrelevant, it's going to replace itself with an actual good card, not just a mercenary token.
This is so savage. Like, I can't, the language you're using is so aggressive and hurtful to my Nezumi that we won't stand for it. My problem is that you can't suit this up. I guess you can play like a...
You mean you can't suit it up? What are we talking about here?
I mean, like, there's like the reason I was excited about this card is that I was like, is there a way to like dump a +1/+1 counter on it or are there good equipments? No. Are there like good auras? No. And so like this just doesn't do enough. And so what I like about the Nezumi thing is like, it's not an aggressive card. It's a defensive card and it's the two rectangles. And this is like sort of two rectangles, except you have to spend the mana on it. I don't know.
I have my second, let me ask you this.
Go ahead.
The crash course.
Yes, sir.
Mercenary tokens, baby. They're going to pump the power of this thing. And red, white?
Oh, like, I'm
gonna
be dumb. It's going
to be attacking as a 2/2 first strike, a 3/2 first strike. This card's really good.
Yeah. You're right. C+. Okay. That's two for two in the red category.
All right. That takes us on to Deadeye Duelist. One in red for a 1/3 human assassin with reach. You can pay one tap to have it deal one damage to target opponent. You give us a synergy C+. I gave us a D+.
Repeatable crime?
You're not
in for repeatable crime and good types and blocks. Holy cow.
It's only
number 36. Deadeye Duelist has reach.
Yeah, but it's not going to eat anything. This looks like a bunch of stuff that none of it quite adds up to what I want here. And I see all of that, but like, you're going to ping them on their end step. So yeah, I can kind of block. Are you really going to have the extra one mana to activate this? Like, one is so much.
Like, it's so funny. Like, we just, like, switch roles for no reason. Like, from card to card, it's just like, let me say everything positive about the card, and then the other person is like, yeah, but everything you're saying is actually a downside. Like, I think we're just going to have to see where the chips fall with this card.
My guess is not good enough, because I also think...
I know, reflective of your grade. I'm just trying to move us along here.
My last point here. Blue-black is the deck that wants repeatable crime. I don't think the red decks care about it that much.
Okay. If that is true, then you're right. Then this card gets a lot worse.
Yep. Next, we've got Outlaw's Fury. This is 2 red for an instant at common. Creatures you control get +2/+0 until end of turn. If you control an outlaw, exile the top card of your library. Till the end of your next turn, you may play that card. You give us a C, I give us a D.
I got bad news for you, buddy. You're wrong. You're wrong.
Wrong. Wow. Good argument. Shake your hand. Good game. Is well played.
This is on the job.
No.
Okay. So yes, it doesn't give a boost of toughness, but it costs a mana cheaper. And then you don't have to spend 2 mana to draw the card. You just draw the card.
I think losing the +1 on toughness is a big deal.
For 1 less mana, though?
I think it's a big deal. I don't think you care about this being a mana cheaper.
That is a hard sell for me, that the 1 toughness on the job. I know that it mattered for, like, how you had to line up blocks against stuff, like you had to anticipate that, you know, and it really saved a lot of creatures if they blocked poorly. That won't be the case for Outlaw's Fury, so I hear it. I still think the mana cheaper and not having to spend the mana to draw the card makes up for, like, that's a lot.
I think what you give up by not getting the +1 toughness is, like, the function of on the job, where you could, like, go 2-drop, 3-drop, turn 4, attack Smash. On the job and feel great about it, because it was very hard for them to, even if they knew you had on the job, line up any sort of profitable block. Like, they can just jam their creatures in front of yours, and then you're down a card. Well, I guess you're not down a card. All right. Okay.
It's tough because I feel like you're selling me and I'm selling you. Like, I was like, you're right. Maybe the 1 toughness is the big deal. But, like, the comp here, I just think, like, we saw how good on the job was. This is extremely close. You have to assume, again, that you have some warm pee in play. But, like, I think red decks are going to have something in play. Sorry, I have to do it. You said it. You started it. I'm just going with it. I think we have to assume you have those types in play if you're a red deck, a red aggressive deck. Obviously, if you don't, this is much worse. So maybe for balance, you have to grade it a little lower. I don't know.
This card is going to get played. I just think you're not going to be quite as desperately aggressive for it as you were on the job in white decks and MKM. But this is certainly going to have a home. Like, you're going to play Outlaw's Fury in some red-white decks, maybe in some red-black decks. Next up, we have Quilled Charger. This is 3 red for a 4/3. Whenever it attacks while saddled, it gets +1/+2 and gains menace until end of turn. It's got saddle 2. You give us a C-. I give us a C+. I think this card is outstanding. You're going to play this on 4, smash with a 5/5 menace on turn 5. This card's going to hit the battlefield, and you're going to be scrambling as the opponent to try to figure out how to answer it.
Yeah, I guess I haven't done... Are you not going to be You're just... The language you use is so tilting. What about this? What about I pass with my mana up, and then at the end, you think everything is hunky-dory. Maybe I have a counterspell, whatever. And then I slam a huge ETB tapped 4-mana 4/4 as the blue opponent. I untap, and you are scrambling. Does that work? Did that work?
It does not work. It's a 4/4 without menace with no abilities.
Yeah. I get, but, like, yeah. I see it. Like, it's just a 4-drop. They're all fine.
Like, imagine red green. You're gonna curve, like, the mana dork into this on turn 3.
Let's be honest. I'm never drafting red green. Like,
let's just your opponents.
My opponents might.
Your opponents are gonna be playing mana dork into this, and then you're gonna be scrambling a turn sooner to get out of the path of this very aggressive mount that's gonna run you over.
That's so true. Okay, how about this? I'm a green blue player. I have play mana dork on 2. I pass on turn 3. Flash in a tapped 4-mana 4/4. You are scrambling.
I'm not loving this bit we're doing.
I can do it all day. You might be right. You might be right. That's fair. Moving on, we got one uncommon I want to talk about, which is Mage Bane Lizard. One in red for a 1/4. Whenever a player casts a non-creature spell, Mage Bane Lizard deals damage to that player equal to the number of non-creature spells they've cast this turn. He gives a D plus, he gives a D minus. I guess this is just terrible.
This card is horrible. It's for everyone. It's global. And I also get tilted because every time I read it, for some reason, I read MAGA Bane Lizard. And I think that MAGA is the bane of my existence.
Wow.
Not to get political here, but that's what happened. And it's like orange, so that I think of Donald Trump's hair. Like, it just every time.
Wow. RIP our MAGA listeners. Let's move on to green. First up is Ankle Biter. Single green for a 1/1 with Death Touch. I give this a C-, you gave this a D. I think you're just right. It's hard for me. Like, I always think about, you know, that this does a thing. This does a unique thing, right? A 1-mana, 1/1 Death Touch. That's why I wanted to talk about it rather than just write it off and change my grade. But so it does a unique thing that, like, it can block some larger threats later in the game. I think at the end of the day, that's still just replacement level. That's not, like, yes, it's a unique thing, but it's not a thing you're generally actively seeking.
Right. And I think the fact that this basically just doesn't do anything on offense is more than enough to make up for. It's like the 0-4. It's like the Pillar Field Ox or whatever. Like, it is closer to that than not.
Yep.
In Modern Limited.
I think you're right, and I'm giving it a D.
All right, that takes us on to Hard Bristle Bandit. This is one in a green for a 1/1. Plant Rogue. Taps for 1 mana of any color. And whenever you commit a crime, untap it. This ability triggers only once each turn. You give us a C-. I give us a B-. This card is outstanding in green.
Ugh. Skullduggeries are just going to nom this thing for lunch.
I agree. Skullduggery against, I thought about this when I gave it. It's great. Skullduggery, you're going to be real sad. But if your opponent doesn't have Skullduggery exactly, this card's going to be very good.
Yeah. God, I've been burned so many times in the past. I used to be like, the green mana dork is like the top common for green every set. And then that just like wasn't the case set after set after set. That I've cooled, and maybe the pendulum has swung too far in the other direction for me. And I could go up to C or whatever. B- just seems so aggressive to me, because then at the end of the day, if everything is a 2-for-1 in the format, yes, getting to your 2-for-1s faster is the thing. But then when the dust settles, you have 2-for-1 yourself by putting this in your deck, because this doesn't do anything.
Yeah, I think I'm willing to pay the tax of getting to my stuff sooner.
Yeah, I think
this is closer to Mox Emerald than not in the format.
Oof, okay, that's a take. That's a take I'm here for. Next up, we have Spinewoods Paladin. 4 and a green for a 5/4 with Trample. When it ETBs, you gain 3 life, and it has Plot. For 3 and a green, I give this a C-, you give this a C+. I'm here for the C+. I'm not, like, I don't feel strongly about my C-. This was more of a just like on rate, like how much better is this than other things you can do for 4 or 5 mana in the format. And ETB gain 3 life and 5/4 trample, probably a mark above for sure. So I could see C+. I'm not opposed to it. Do you feel pretty strongly about this is the thing?
I really like this. Yeah. But I'm also just predisposed to like this type of card. But the fact this could easily not have trample. The fact that this has trample makes me really think it's pretty good in the format.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to get chumped by mercenary tokens. It's going to be a problem that you have to deal with.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I also think plot is a commodity too. Like I think there's going to be a choke point on how much plot stuff you can get. And I think plot's going to be really strong
in green, though. Like, we're outside of a color or color pair that particularly cares about double spelling or not doing stuff on your turn. I think plot stuff is worse.
Green's big plot, baby.
Blue green is big plot. You're really buying into the WotC archetypes. Okay, blue green is big plot.
Well, but so imagine a world 1 out of 100 drafts where you play the blue green gold uncommon on turn 2.
Ugh.
And then like turn 4 you double plot with like two of these. Yep. Like, and then you're a little behind, and then they hit the battlefield and your opponent is scrambling.
Now that turn 4 play 2 free 5/4s or whatever. Yeah. That is a scramble for sure.
That takes us on to our gold cards, where we've got Gem Lightfoot Sky Explorer. This is 2 white-blue for a 3/3 flying vigilance at uncommon. And at the beginning of your end step, if you haven't cast a spell from your hand this turn, draw a card. You gave this a B+, and I gave this a C+.
Yeah, I mean, four mana 3/3 flying vigilance is good. That attacks well, that blocks well. And then next turn, you plot something or you pass with an instant and you draw a card. Like, you just have to kill. You have to kill this immediately or this runs away with the game.
Yeah.
And it's a threat.
Have to kill. It's not that, but you're never like, here's the thing. Here's what I don't like about this card. I think blue white is going to have no shortage of ways to generate value. I think it is going to be tight on ways to not fall behind. And I think this doesn't help you play defense at all. Like, I think blue white's operating standpoint is going to be behind. You're going to be trying to stabilize, and once you stabilize, you're going to win the game easily. And I don't think this is a good blocker, and ergo I don't like it that much.
So if they attack with their 2/2, then yeah, you have a decision of like, are they bluffing me hard or do they have something? And then maybe you don't attack there. But like, most opponents, if they don't have a trick, are not going to bluff attack their 2/2. And they don't have to have a trick. And so it is going to keep some stuff back. Now, again, like, is it keeping some stuff back that other things you do for 4 mana aren't? No, but it's also generating you a card every turn.
Yes, but like, and then you're going to have to, I don't know. It's tough to find the curve where this slots in. I think once you start, I guess you plot on 3, play this plus whatever you plotted on 3. Yeah, okay. Maybe B-. I don't think this, you have this graded as like it's one of the best of the gold uncommons. I do not think it is that, but okay. Maybe I'm low at C+.
How we've the mighty have fallen from Raf Capuchin from Dominaria.
That had flash. If that this had flash, yeah. Sign me up, baby.
Yeah, I agree.
Also, I agree. Dominaria was all terrible cards.
That's
so
true. Raph was... They don't make them like they used to. In the artifacts, we have Sterling Hound, 3 mana for a 3/2 dog. When it enters the battlefield, surveil 2. I give this a D+, you give this a C. How is this anything other than pure filler?
Green-black deck's really going to want Sterling Hound, I think.
So you can give it a synergy C if you want. But like...
I would like to give it a synergy C then.
Okay,
that seems... Give it a synergy C, but...
Still seems aggressive to me, but...
This is close to Golden Egg territory, I think, for me.
Well, that's only because Silver jury's out on Silver Deputy. Like, I'm nervous about the 2-mana 1/2. I got my hopes for Gold Pan. Gold Pan's going to be our Golden Egg. I can't believe you have a higher grade sort of on Tomb Trawler. 2 mana 0/4 at uncommon. You can pay 2, put target card from your graveyard on the bottom of your library. I said D-, you give this a build around D+, which is basically saying the same thing. This is so bad.
It's so bad, but you know we're both going to try to loop our deck with this.
The problem is, as you said, is like...
There's not enough ways to make it.
Yeah, how do you even get in danger of decking?
I graded this before I saw how few ways there were to mill. I am less optimistic. I might join you at build around D- for Tomb Trawler.
Build around D-.
We're really giving the people the information they need this format wide open.
All right, the wrestling match is over. Well duked, sir. Let's get to these top commons and uncommons. For white, my top commons in the number one spot, I do have Holy Cow, 2 and a white, 2/2 flash flyer. When it ETBs, you gain 2 life and scry 1. I know you're not a huge fan of that one. Next, I have Take Up the Shield, an oldie, but a real goodie. 1 and a white for an instant. Put a +++ counter on target creature. It gains lifelink and indestructible until end of turn. And number 3, I have Vengeful Townsfolk. 2 and a white for a 3/3. Whenever one or more other creatures you control die, put a +++ counter on Vengeful Townsfolk. Something that you'll notice, certainly from my top commons, 3-drops are good in this set. Like, it was like I kept feeling like I had to, again, on balance, like try and find a 2-drop to slot in there, because I was like, my 3 commons in a color can't all be 3-drops. But sometimes they are, and I think that will end up shaking out as like what's the best of the bunch, and then you'll have to, you know, shore it up with some 2-drops. But for now, I went with the 2-mana trick and the two 3-mana creatures.
Well, and the hard thing is also of those 3-drops, they might go in different decks too. They might all be good Magic the Gathering cards that slot into two of the four archetypes or one of the four archetypes, or two of them go in these two and two, one of them goes in the other two, you know?
Right. Yep.
My top commons in white take up the shield number one.
Oof.
Trained Arynx number two. This is my take. One on a white for the 3/1. Whenever it attacks while saddled, it gains first strike until end of turn. You scry one and you saddle it for two. I think this is the best aggressive two drop in the format. And I think there are going to be some white decks that want to attack, notably green white mounts. I think Relay wants to beat down red white as well. Both those decks are going to need to be picking Trained Arynx quite highly, I think. And then in the number three slot, I've got Vengeful Townsfolk. The other thing I want to touch on, we had talked about how good removal was going to be. I think Take Up the Shield being in the format and Snakeskin Veil being in the format at single green +1/+1 counter hexproof. The like white green especially is just going to laugh at removal. Like if you can get ahead with your mounts and then hold up either one of those two cards and then blank your opponent's removal spells, I think it's going to be a little tough that way also.
That's a really good point. I'm glad you shouted that out.
All right, takes us on to the white uncommons. My number one white uncommon, Lassoed by the Law. 3 and a white for an enchantment. When it ETBs, exile target non-land permanent opponent controls until Lassoed by the Law leaves the battlefield. And when it ETBs, you make a 1/1 red mercenary token. Number two, I've got Prairie Dog. 1 and a white for a 2/2 lifelink. The beginning of your end step, if you haven't cast a spell from your hand this turn, put a +1/+1 counter on Prairie Dog. And 4 and a white, until end of turn, if you would put one or more +1/+1 counters on a creature you control, put that many +1/+1/+1 counters on it instead.
Prairie Dog is a monster.
Prairie Dog's real good, yeah. And lastly, I've got Prosperity Tycoon. This is 3 and a white for a 4/2, ETBs to make a mercenary, and you can pay 2, sacrifice a token to give it indestructible until end of turn, and tap it.
Yeah, I'm glad you're as high on Tycoon as I am, because I was like, oh, am I grading this too highly? Am I like comparing it to Chimney Rabble too much as like the 4-drop that makes a 1/1? But then it also has that ability, like, card's a banger. So I have the same number two and number three. And as I said before, Getaway Glamour is my my top uncommon. That's the white spree spell that can kill a thing for 2 additional mana or save a thing or exile it rather for 1 additional mana.
Yeah, I like that. I think that probably should be in my top commons as well and get Lassoed by the Law out of there.
What's going on in blue?
In blue commons, number one, this is either going to be the best take of all time or the worst take of all time.
This is a good take.
Phantom Interference, number one, single blue for an instant with spree, +3, create a 2/2 white spirit creature token with flying, +1, counter target spell unless its controller pays 2. This card looks absurd. The one potential knock is that you're not going to be able to counter plotted spells with it. But other than that, like, this card is really, really, really strong. Like, 5 mana 2/2 flyer, counter your thing, if you manage to stick that, is really good, and there's so much stuff to do at instant speed that it's going to be near impossible to play around Phantom Interference.
Well, and like, there's so many good ETBs, and this being able to prevent those is also great as a quench. Like, the reason that quench stinks is that eventually they have the mana for it, and when that happens, then you have a 4 mana 2/2 flyer with flash, which like isn't great, but it does a thing. Like, I have Phantom Interference as number two. It could easily be number one. I think this card is excellent.
My number two is a Lone Shark, 3 and a blue for the 3/4. When it ETBs, if you've cast 2 or more spells this turn, draw a card, and it's got plot for 4 mana. And then my number three, Seize the Secrets, 2 and a blue for a sorcery, costs 1 less to cast this turn if you've committed a crime, draw 2 cards.
You think Divination is back?
I mean, this is 1 and a blue, draw 2 cards, and I think that is very good.
If you've committed a crime, which usually will cost mana, like unless it's a crime land, it's going to cost mana.
Gonna be crime lands, baby. I'm gonna build my deck right.
I know you're crime land fiend. I have Lone Shark in the number one spot. I stuck by our take last week that it's the best blue common. I have Phantom Interference in the number two spot, and I'm surprised this isn't in yours. I have Take the Fall, single blue instant, target creature gets -1/-0 until end of turn. If you have some warm pee, it gets -4/-0 instead, and you draw a card. This is 1 mana, win combat, draw a card, and commit a crime. That's a lot, baby. That's a lot.
Good. I like Take the Fall. I could see it in the number three slot for sure.
In my uncommons, in the number one, I have Outlaw Stitcher, 3 and a blue, 1/4. When it enters the battlefield, you make a 2/2 blue and black zombie rogue creature token, then put 2 +1/+1 counters on that token for each spell you've cast this turn other than the first. It also has plot for 4 and a blue. We talked about this a lot last week. I've got my big Sphinx in the number two spot, the 5 mana 3/5 flying Vigi Ward 2. And in the number three spot, another spree spell that I like, Metamorphic Blast, single blue instant. The spree costs are +1 until end of turn, target creature becomes a white rabbit with base power and toughness 01, and +3, target player draws two cards. So 2 mana, win combat, 4 mana, draw 2, 5 mana, Mull Drifter.
Yeah, this card is absurd. Yeah, that is in mine as well. So my number one, also Outlaw Stitcher. I have Metamorphic Blast at number 2. I didn't get your big Vigi Sphinx in my top 3 uncommons. Instead, I've got Slickshot Lockpicker. This is 2 and a blue for a 2/3. Whenever it enters the battlefield, target instant or sorcery card in your graveyard gains flashback until end of turn. Flashback cost is equal to its mana cost, and you can plot it for 2 and a blue.
Yeah.
What's not to like? Snapcaster Mage for free.
Yeah, nothing. Love it.
All right, it takes us on to Black Commons. What do you got there?
Vault Plunderer. When I saw this, I was like, ooh, there it is. 2 and a black for 3/1 human rogue. When ETB's target player draws a card and loses 1 life. So mostly you're targeting yourself, but you can commit a crime with this if you need to. Number 2, I have Desert's Dew. I went with a cheaper removal spell, 1 and a black instant. Creature gets -2/-2 until end of turn, and an additional -1/-1 until end of turn for each desert you control. And then my Link Breaker, single black for a 1/1 at number 3. And then when it dies, you get a 1/1 red mercenary creature token.
He'll love to see it. I also, the thing that happened to me with the Maga Bane Lizard also happens to me with Desert's Dew. Every time I read Desert's Dew, I think it's Desert's Dew because you get like your just desserts. Desserts. Yes, yeah. Like every time.
That's funny. That's very funny.
Those cards are like the wrong way around in my brain. I also have Vault Plunder at number 1. Number 2, I've got Consuming Ashes. 2 black-black for an instant, exile target creature. If it had mana value 3 or less, surveil 2. I think that removal spell at instant speed plus the surveil plus the exile, like you're going to need to get some rares dead in this format, and that's going to do the job.
I think that's better. I think I wanted to prematurely concede that that is better than Desert's Dew. The more I think about Desert's Dew, the more it reminds me of the, like, again, I can't stop thinking about this being like Neo. But that was a Dave Humphrey set too, right?
Yeah.
So Twisted Embrace was the aura, 2 black-black, enchanted creature gets +1/+1, and when it ETBs, you kill a thing. And then there was the 1 and a black instant speed thing gets -2/-2, and an additional -1/-1 for each modified creature you control. And that removal spell stunk. It was like nearly unplayable, and I am worried that Desert's Dew will be closer to that than not. And I feel everything you're saying about, if I want to kill something, I want to make sure I can kill it, and Consuming Ashes does that.
Yeah, and I think the other Desert's Dew to me is truly what it says in the name. I think that's going to be a card that you get late as a reward for being in a Desert's heavy deck because it's splashable.
Well, and then if you're in a black-red crime deck or blue-black crime deck, then you care about the cheaper way to commit a crime, maybe more than the 4-mana way to commit a crime, so you can double spell, etc. But like, yeah, I agree. I think overall, the catch-all removal spell is going to be better.
And lastly, I've got Desperate Bloodseeker here. 1 and a black for a 2/2 lifelink. ETBs, target player mills 2 cards.
That almost, for what it's worth, that almost was the number 3, but I had to give a shout to my one drop.
All right. Black Uncommons. What do you got going on there?
Number 1, Unscrupulous Contractor. 2 and a black for a 3/2. When it enters the battlefield, you can sack a creature. When you do, target player draws 2 cards and loses 2 life, and it has plot for 2 and a black. Reminds me of the Exploit 3/2 Scorpion from Vow. Number 2, I've got Hollow Marauder. That's a 6 and a black 4/2. Costs 1 less to cast for each creature card in your graveyard. Has flying and then potential 3/1. When it ETBs, your opponent discards a card. If it doesn't cost 4 or more, you draw a card. And then number 3, I have Unfortunate Accident, single black instant. It has spree. You can add 2 and a black to destroy a creature, and you can add 1 to make a mercenary token.
Yeah, I think a nod to how many of Black's uncommons are truly bangers here.
No overlap.
Zero overlap.
And neither of us put Shoot the Sheriff in there, which like could easily be in the mix as well.
Right. So I think whatever you think about like how you're viewing colors in going into the format, the fact that Black's uncommons are just banger after banger after banger has to be a huge vote in Black's favor, especially with the number of uncommons we're getting nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
Number 1, I've got Rictus Robber. This is 3 and a black for a 4/3. Putting my money where my mouth is.
Yeah.
The plot creature we argued about for forever that brings a 2/2 along with it if a creature died this turn. I probably should have this as number 1 instead. I, the more I think about this card, the higher I am on it. Rakish Crew in my number two slot. It's two and a black for an enchantment. ETBs make a mercenary, and whenever an outlaw dies, each opponent loses a life, you gain a life. And in the number three slot, I've got Forsaken Miner. This is black for a 2/2 skeleton rogue. It can't block. Whenever you commit a crime, you can pay a black. If you do, return Forsaken Miner from your graveyard to the battlefield. I am in on that sacrifice, move things around, get value life for black. Yours are probably more intrinsically stronger cards than the ones I picked.
I like your top two. I think that rating the one mana can't block recurrable thing highly, I think, is a little sus to me. That feels way more constructed, applicable than limited.
I'm going to mill this into my graveyard in my black green deck, get some value, sacrifice it to draw two cards.
It's free real estate. Talk to me.
What you see about the Nozumi.
Yes.
I see about Forsaken Miner. I don't know what it's going to do yet. It's going to do some good things.
Yes. I like that. I do like that philosophy. Just like I see the possibilities, what those are. I'm not sure, but they exist. What three drops and in what order did you put for your red commons?
This is going to destroy the crash course arguments, because now we don't even have to think of arguments. It's going to be like, I like this card. I've got a good vibe about it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
All right, red commons. Number one, Prickly Pear. This card is dumb. Two and a red for a 2/2. ETBs, bring a mercenary along with it.
That's so ridiculous.
17 lands top common, for sure.
Yeah.
Next, we've got Irascible Wolverine. Two and a red for a 3/2. When ETBs, exile the top card of your library. Until end of turn, you may play that card. Plot it for two and a red. That card also excellent. You're going to have some deck building restrictions with it, but assuming you meet the deck building restrictions, the card's going to be very good. And the number three slot, be ready to scramble, Quilled Charger. Three and a red for a 4/3. Whenever it attacks while saddled, it gets +1/+2 in menace, and you saddle it for two.
We've reached 90 minutes in. I'm loopy. We've reached the point. I had the same number one and number two. I'm sad about our love for the Irascible Wolverine last week, that it just got immediately unseated as top red common by Prickly Pear. And I put the removal spell in number three, Explosive Derailment, the single red spree, add two to deal four to something. I just think that's incredibly efficient.
Yeah, that's a better card than Quilled Charger. But I do like Quilled Charger, yeah. And I wanted it to have representation.
I appreciate that. # all Quilled Chargers. In the uncommons, I have Scale Storm Summoner at number one, 2 and a red, 3/3. When it attacks, you make a 3/1 red dino creature token if you control a creature with power 4 or greater.
Mister, I'm never drafting red green. All format has that.
I don't need to.
I'm gonna play
red blue. I'm gonna flash in my 4/4.
Oh, I forgot. I'm gonna be scrambling.
You're gonna be scrambling. Number two, I've got Gila Courser, 2 and a red for a 4/2. It has saddle for one, and if it attacks while saddled, you exile the top card of your library until the end of your next turn. You can play that card. And
your top uncommons sound like you're drafting red green every draft.
They're just good on their own. I don't know what you're talking about. And then in number three, I've got Longhorn Sharpshooter, 2 and a red for a 3/3. It has reach. When it becomes plotted, it deals 2 damage to any target, and it has plot for 3 and a red.
Yeah, I've got mine in a slightly different order. I've got Longhorn Sharpshooter 1.
Whoa!
You talked me up on it last week.
Good. I didn't realize it was that I talked you up that much.
I trust my co-host.
I appreciate it.
Longhorn Sharpshooter 1. I have Scalestorm Summoner 2. And then I have Scorching Shot 3. That's the red-red, deal 5 to target creature. Although, knowing that kills everything, I kind of want to bump that up to number 1.
It's just red-red is so tough.
Yeah, but I mean...
But it kills
That's
everything.
What you want in a red aggressive deck. Like, you want to have your red-red, and you want to be able to kill whatever your opponent plays for 2 mana. Like, it fits the bill in red aggro. Mm-hmm. I do think, however we felt about black's uncommons, red's uncommons, it was a little tough to get excited about red's uncommons.
And they all felt a little interchangeable, right? Like, I was like, I could put these in whatever order. There were also maybe, like, 3 others I could put in there. But I didn't feel excited about them the way I did about blacks on commons
or blues or whites. Like, they were just a little lackluster.
Yeah. Green commons, what do you got there?
Number one, Patient Naturalist, which is I think the saving grace for Patient Naturalist is I think green aggro looks really strong. And I think green aggro decks are not going to be that into Patient Naturalist, potentially, hopefully, fingers crossed. That's what I'm telling myself anyway. Mm-hmm. But Patient Naturalist, number one, 2 and a green for a 2/3, ETBs, mill 3, put a land from among the milled cards into your hand. If you can't, create a treasure token. Number two, Hardbristle Bandit. That's my 1 and a green, 1/1 mana dork, that whenever you commit a crime, it untaps. And number three, I've got Spine Woods Paladin. That's the 4G, 5-4 trample we talked about earlier. ETBs, gain 3 life, plot for 3 and a green.
I mean, I've got Patient Naturalist there at number one, but I've got a couple different ones. You're right, I am drafting a lot of green. Bristlepack Sentry, or red-green, rather. Bristlepack Sentry number two. This is mostly just like a course correction, because we all missed on Drowsing Pteranodon, and I was like, are we going to miss again? So this is one and a green for a 3-3 with Defender. If you control a creature with power 4 or greater, it can attack as though it didn't have Defender. There's no, like, aura themes. There's not a lot of plus and plus one counter stuff, so I don't know, but there are mercenary tokens. So, like, just use a mercenary token to pump this, and now it's a 4-3, and it can attack. Like, that is pretty good. So, I don't know. I'm putting it there. And then I have Throw from the Saddle at number three, one and a green sorcery. Target creature you control gets plus and plus one until end of turn. You put a counter on it instead if it's a mount, and then it bites a creature you don't control.
I like it. Uncommons for me. Number one, Rise of the Varmints. I think this is going to be the build around of the format, and I'm excited to do it. This is three and a green for a sorcery. Create X 2/1 green varmint creature tokens, where X is the number of creature cards in your graveyard, and it's got plot for two and a green.
Love it.
Number two, I've got Outcaster Greenblade. Two and a green for a 1/2 ETB. Search your library for a basic land or desert card. Reveal it, put it into your hand, then shuffle. Gets +1/+1 for each desert you control.
Beaver busted.
And in the number three slot, I've got Cerulf's Packmate, Mr. Beastbond, Outcaster, 2G for a 3/3. When it ETBs, if you control a creature with power 4 or greater, you draw a card, and it has plot for one and a green.
Yeah, I put my money where my mouth is as the resident red-green drafter of the podcast. That's my number one uncommon. I have Outcaster Greenblade, same number two as you in the number two spot. And I have Aloe Alchemist as my number three, one and a green for a 3/2 with trample. When it becomes plotted, target creature gets +3/+2 and gains trample until end of turn, and has plot for one and a green. So in your opener, just a nice beater, 2-mana 3/2 trampler. Top deck it later. You want a combat trick attached to a creature you play next turn, or not a combat trick because you have to do it at sorcery speed, but still gonna enable a pretty large attack.
Yes. Gonna turn on that Bristlepack Sentry or whatever it's called.
Heck yes. There it is. What can be said about this format that we haven't already said in our 100-minute podcast?
Yeehaw, partner.
Yeah, the significant lack of Old West accents and phrasing here, we'll have to bump those up in future episodes for sure.
Really? I don't know that that's what the listeners want.
Yes, we do, partner.
Seriously, though, anything before we go here?
I think there's one four-letter word that I'm excited about for this format, and that is plot.
Plot, baby. Yeah.
The idea of plot and sequencing and mana usage with plot and spree are what I have my eyes on first. And maybe I'll get to red, green, power four at some point.
Well, I think just the idea of plot and who's the beatdown is so intriguing.
It's going to change
me.
Yeah. So like, yeah, that does, it feels like the texture or tempo of the game is going to change quite a bit from turn to turn. Like, and you're going to have to be really in tune with, okay, they plotted that. So what does that mean for next turn? So obviously they're not doing anything this turn, but what does that mean for next turn? Like, how far behind am I going to be? What do I need to do to prep for that, et cetera? That's why they don't have counters. I'm just now realizing it. That's why there is only that
because
one.
Because it's all face up. Yeah.
Because you can't just be like, I'll plot this thing. And you're like, cool, I'll hold up cancel for next turn.
Right. And that's why that thing can't counter plot things,
right?
Also, because then it would be horrifically.
They know insane. What they're doing. Those old so-and-sos over at R&D know what they're doing.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Great place to wrap us up. Good luck at your pre-releases, everyone. Thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
You can find all of our content at lordsoflimited.com. Links to everything, our episode backlog, our YouTube and Twitch streams, our tier lists, which we'll have up hopefully before the pre-release. You can have that there, as well as our backlogs of those. Our merch, courtesy of TeePublic, and of course, our Patreon rewards are all available via our website.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.